You're listening to the Script Lab Podcast. I'm Shani Edwards. Today I talk to Max Eggers, the co-writer of one of my favorite movies of the year, The Lighthouse. It stars Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson as two isolated lighthouse keepers who basically descend into madness before our very eyes. Here's a clip.
I seen you sparring with a gull. Best leave him be.
Why is it bad luck to kill a gull?
In him's the souls of sailors. What met their maker?
Bad luck to kill a seabird.
Okay, hi Max.
Hello.
Welcome to LA. We're just talking about traffic and parking and all of those LA things.
It's LA. Yeah, you find out when you come here. It's like, yeah, it is a lot of driving, surprisingly, right? No. I think like New York, it's like, what is great though, honestly, about LA is if you're late to a meeting in New York, there's no excuse. But if you're late to a meeting here, everyone's like, it's okay. I was late. Don't worry about it. And I think I'm still getting used to that idea of like, when someone says it's okay in LA, they actually mean it.
Oh,
in,
yeah.
In New York, they're like, it's okay. Writing you off. But yeah.
No, we get it. We get it. So we're here to talk about The Lighthouse.
Yes.
Oh my God, this movie. It's powerful. It's hallucinatory.
Yeah.
It's mythic.
Mm-hmm.
It's masculine.
That it is.
In a lot of good and bad ways. I don't know about you, but whenever men are isolated, I don't care if you're gay or straight, whatever. You need women around, right?
Yeah, and, you know, for us, it's like, you know, the two big female characters, you know, one of them is powerful, though, I will say. She, the sea. She has power, you know, and she will do something to those two men who, as my brother said, are trapped in a giant phallus.
It's funny, I was going to ask you about some of the symbolism, but the giant phallus didn't occur to me.
Yes. Well, it's one of those things where it's like, it's right there in your face, and you don't think about it until you're like, someone says, and you're like, oh yeah, duh.
Right, duh. So let's go back. One thing I really appreciate about the film, as in The Witch, is sort of this heightened, stylized language.
Yes.
I have a theater background, as do you.
I do, yep.
And it's just really exciting to see this language up on the screen. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about that and how you got inspired to write this story.
Sure. I mean, I think it all comes from research. I think, obviously, we dip into the great sources like Melville, Stevenson, Samuel Taylor Coleridge with The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. So in terms of the language, you know, it like I said, it all goes back to research. So you start from a place of trying to understand who these people were. And then you get into things like simply like sailors' dictionaries. You know, when we're trying to think about somebody like Willem Dafoe's character, they're enormously helpful. But you have to know the context. You have to be able to write not only in their lingo, but from their perspective. And I think that's where, if you watch the film or you read the script, you see a lot of the antecedents with Melville, for example. I think that's a big one. But then also, there was a main author named Sarah Orne Jewett, and she was interviewing seamen and woodsmen in Maine from the era that we wrote in, which is about 1890. And she was enormously helpful for us because she wrote these things, she wrote these interviews in dialect. And actually, my brother's wife, she was able to find a dissertation, someone's dissertation on it, where we had some breakdowns of the sort of rules of all the accents. You know, I think actually coming from a theater background, the rules of how you perform accents is exactly how it is as you are doing it when you're writing it, which is, you know, certain vowel rules, certain consonant rules. I think the most obvious thing is the rhotic R, which is in Willem Dafoe's character, Thomas Wake. So the sort of pirate kind of thing where it's like West Country, where it's like, arr, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
But it's directly contrasted with the non-rhotic R, which is what Pattinson's character does. So it's that sort of pa-ka-ka kind of thing, you know? But again, that all is research, and that was helped by the accents was helped by Sarah Oren Jewett. But then, you know, we had the influence of Melville, and even as Rob has said, my brother, like Miltonian dissertations, you know, that Willem expounds, you know. So yeah. And I think to your question about theater, I think we both have a background in Shakespeare. Our father was a Shakespeare professor. So, and our mother was a theater director.
That makes so much more sense. Okay.
Yeah. So I could go on, but I mean, it's something that I think has been in our blood. I don't say that I do this for pleasure, but Rob says that he reads, you know, this kind of language for just immense pleasure, and it's in his bones. And I think I had a little bit more of a learning curve. But as performers, you know, we've been in this as children, we've been in this kind of, I don't want to say Shakespearean, that's giving us a lot of credit, but we've had that in our bones for a while, you know.
Yeah. Sure. So nature, obviously, plays a big part in this movie. You mentioned the sea being a character,
right.
How powerful she is.
Right.
There's the seabird.
Yes.
Right.
Seagull. Yeah.
It's the seagull and the mermaid,
of course. Yes, of course.
Gotta love a mermaid. Gotta love it.
Men love their mermaids.
They sure do.
Sorry.
What did you, when you were doing research, what did you learn about mermaids?
Well, I think they obviously go back to classical mythology, and obviously I think it's one of those things where, you know, women were actually, in terms of the folklore, bad luck on sea. So I think, you know, personifying those that they miss was something that was clear, you know, and I think also goes back to, as I said, Greek mythology with the sirens. So you have the danger of what listening to that feminine voice might do to you if you follow it. It's one of those things where you can go deep into the rabbit hole with mermaids, and you can see it in folklore, like in Greeks and Ireland and lots of different places. But I think for us, it was much more about the archetype of it, what she represents for, like, I would say sexual repression, you know, especially for Robert Pattinson's character. You know, he finds this scrimshaw mermaid in a mattress. And then, of course, he does see it later in the film, like in person. So I think it was something that was, I think, more linked for us to something like temptation, like it is in Homer, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So what made you want to write a movie about a giant phallus lighthouse?
That's a good question. I think.
Tell me about your mother as well.
No, oh my God! Just kidding. Yeah, right. Or oh God. Or maybe my dad. Maybe he has more responsibility. So I think I'll try to be succinct. I was an actor, as I have been saying, and before I was a screenwriter. And I think I was inspired by The Witch. I think my brother's process was really inspirational, even from the research level, from the writing process before it was financed, and I always thought I had a sort of writer's soul. I had people come up to me and say, you're a writer, you're not an actor. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. But then I started dabbling in it. You know, I started writing bad screenplays, as you have to. And then I hit on a really good idea. I realized no one had done a genre film on a lighthouse, specifically horror. And I was like, I did some research, found that Poe had written a story called The Lighthouse, but he never finished it. It was his last story that he never finished. So being a like naive like writer, I thought hilariously, like, oh well, I can finish The Lighthouse for him. Sorry, it's a joke. I'm not comparing myself to Poe, but I had originally called it Burnt Island. It was based on a lighthouse that's, I think, in Kennebunkport called Burnt Island. It was about a man and a dog, a ghost story, much different from what we have right now, but linked to the Poe story. It was about a man and a dog. And but it was about madness on a lighthouse. That's what was clear. I told this to Rob, my brother. He loved the idea. When I couldn't really get it together, again, amateur writer, he asked if he could take a stab at it. Years later, after The Witch, after some projects of his that hadn't come together, after I'd made the switch and wrote a spec script that you know, went to some screenwriting festivals, he thought was halfway decent. And, you know, knowing that this was my idea, it was my idea. he thought, like, we should work together because he needed some help. And actually, it was great. And I think you know, for me, I think in terms of collaboration, it all comes down to trust. And you never know with your brother. You know, sometimes it can be complicated, but thankfully we trust each other. So we knew that however crazy this thing could be, and we knew we wanted it to be crazy from the start, we could trust each other and see where it would go. And I think that should bring me to Rob. Had once he had it in his hands, he knew from the get-go what this thing was going to be. He saw it as a two-hander. We got inspired by a historical event called the Smalls Island Tragedy in Wales in the early 19th century. And it was about two men, both named Thomas, and they get stuck on a lighthouse and something bad befalls them. But we don't follow what happens in the history. We just take sort of the nugget of that and make it into something else, which is this dissertation on masculinity or toxic masculinity. But he knew from the beginning that it was going to be black and white, aspect ratio. We also knew that we were going to have, if it's two men trapped in a giant phallus, farting, peeing, you know, feces, all that stuff, because that's sweating, that stuff, that's what happens when two men, you know, are trapped. Mm. And we also knew from the beginning that we wanted it to be that story of they're there, and then they get stuck, and something bad happens, mm-hmm. really. So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. The two main characters argue quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, my dad has a twin brother.
I'm a twin.
You're a twin, yeah. too. Okay, yeah. Well, all I know is that they still fight. And so I just wonder if any of the arguing was influenced by you and your brother.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, you know, he's told me that my work is vomit, you know? I should probably should have said that. No, but it's true. Like, it's... Yeah, I mean, look, we again, it's about trust, actually, because we've been working together in the theater. Like, he had me... Rob is amazing. Like, he knew he wanted to be a director from when he was, like, 4 years old. He would dress us up in, like, costumes, like Dick Tracy costumes. Like, we were his guinea pigs, you know? And so I think from an early age, we trusted each other. And I think... Yes, I will say, though, that, you know, arguments happen, you know, brothers butt heads. And I think, actually, what's really interesting is the dynamic of Willem's character and Pattinson's character. In the script, they're called Old and Young, actually. Mm-hmm. We kind of did take that on of the head keeper and the assistant. So there was that dynamic that we could identify with there already, you know. And I think, also, we wanted it to be this very archetypal... a story, you know, very classic tragedy, Dionysian and Apollonian, old and young, yeah. And I think, but I can't say, I'd have to be honest and say, yes, of course. Like, there's, as brothers do, you can have knockout, drag out fights. So yeah, yeah.
Your brother, the director, is not your twin.
No.
No, okay.
I have another twin, his name is Sam.
Okay.
Sam and Max.
Okay, great. Just to be clear.
Yes, to be clear.
So there's so many symbols and mythic things in this film. At one point, I was watching it, and they were arguing, and it made me think of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Sure.
That black and white movie.
Sure.
It's very extreme.
Yes.
But then later on, I kind of realized, you know what, this is sort of a Prometheus story, too.
Of course.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I think early on, so when we did the research... It's a couple of things. One is you look into the masculine and you know, you can read any book that's about like psychoanalyzing sexuality or gender, and Prometheus, the Greek pantheon, all that stuff, that is there when you're talking about the masculine. Prometheus, he's often called a culture hero. But what's evident in researching sea folklore is the influence of the Greek and Roman pantheon. So we then saw a common cause for our main character, Pattinson, with Prometheus, because he's this man who's after light, just like Prometheus was. And then because he's flawed, and he's stealing that for ill-gotten gains, personal, he has to be cast down. With Willem Dafoe's character, we actually found Proteus, who is often called the old man of the sea, whom you have to wrestle to get the truth. And he can go through every form imaginable, like fire and water and snakes and whatever. So we just saw, though those two characters never really met, you know, in the stories, we saw archetypal models from Greek mythology with Proteus, the old man of the sea, which is what he's called, and then Prometheus. It was just a very easy thing once we started doing the research to see, and so rich in terms of, again, what it means for the masculine. There's also another character in Greek mythology called Heracles, who he had labors that everybody knows that he did, but then there were extra labors after the fact. And one of them, this is actually not known to most people, very similar to the lighthouse, he was this man, very strong, young, had to do extra labors, didn't want to, just like Pattinson's character. He encountered Proteus when he was told to find golden apples that were guarded by women. I can't remember what kind of sirens they were or whatever, but he had to find Proteus and wrestle him to find the golden apple that gave eternal life.
Oh.
So another sort of Greek mythological analogy that we could have applied. But for us, it was Prometheus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, if that's
no.
like...
No, it's great. Trust me, it's rare that I get to kind of do this deep dive into mythology and stuff.
Yeah. So it's surprising how useful it is. I think someone named Joseph Campbell talked about that or something.
Somebody's journey.
Right.
Maybe he's a hero.
Right.
Yeah. How is this movie personal to you?
Oh, Lord.
And
that's a good question.
What does the light mean to you?
I don't know if I can say what the light means to me because I feel like... what I can say is you need to know if you're worthy of it. I think you can only encounter it and wrestle with it once you know who you are. If you don't and you try to steal it before you're ready, then I think something bad may befall you. I don't want to give too much. I don't want to say we know what it is, but I don't want to say because I feel like that gets close into what is in there, what's in the light. I think for me, bridging off of that, this is about the masculine and the folly of the masculine. I think it's about not knowing. Every story, every script is someone has an issue of the self. You don't know. There's something wrong in terms of the id, the ego, the superego. There's something out of whack here. And you got to order it in some way. That's why they go on the hero's journey. You know, you have to encounter yourself and find out who you truly are. So I think if this is making sense, I think for me, ultimately, it's about not kidding yourself. It's about not denying the truth of who you are. And if you cannot face yourself, then you'll never see the light.
That's heavy.
I'm sorry.
As a person who feels like she's in denial day, every day.
We all are. But that's what makes screenwriting such a wonderful self-reflective process. Because though every time it should be new, you discover yourself in these characters as you're writing them. Because you can't write them if it's not coming from an honest place. So I think that's probably why it's somewhat difficult to kind of get into what it means to me, because it means so much. But I think clearly if you look at the arc of the script, of the story, you know, this man is mired in the unconscious of his own unconscious. And he cannot deal with what he's done. He cannot deal with himself. He's trying to get away from himself. But he still wants to see the light, you know? And then... you know, he has to crawl up there, and then once he sees it and gets above water, you know, to where the light is, he's not worthy, you know. But again, that's just it's about not knowing who you are, not being comfortable with that, and lying, and it's true, we all do that to some degree, but you know, sometimes the light burns. Sometimes it's 95 degrees in October in LA, and anyway.
Were you on set?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was. It was actually wild. That's the thing. Writing this thing was wild. Knowing that people got it was wild, that they embraced it, like our producers. Halfway through our producer's first reading of the script, our Rodrigo Teixeira with RT Features, he texted us, "I love." He's Brazilian. And we were like, whoa. But he got it. And then, you know, you know, obviously you go through the regular stuff in pre-production where you have to fix the things that you wrote that don't make any sense or are factually incorrect or will not work. And there was a lot of stuff we threw at people, so there was a lot of that. But seeing what other people added to it in the process and then seeing it happen on the day and seeing the actors bring what they brought, which was so, we were so blessed because we had ideas about what we wanted. And we, you know, specifically we shaped it in a way that made it hard to kind of go away from what is on screen. I think what you see is on the page to on the screen is actually quite similar. That being said, Pattinson and Defoe, I mean, they brought something magical every day, every take that like I didn't expect. I don't think a lot of people expected. And so being on set was, it was magical, but it was like maddening. Because, again, a lot of the stuff we wanted, it was crazy. Crazy.
Are there any funny stories that you can share?
Sure, absolutely. First of all, I will say that I was responsible for the seagulls. That was my fault, and everybody reminded me of that. We couldn't film. We couldn't get the seagulls in Canada where we shot because it's a protected species. So we had to use seagulls that weren't exactly like the sort of classical, you know, yellow-billed seagulls, but in London. So we had to do that later after the shoot. I remember one day I was talking to our assistant director was passing by me. And if you've seen the film, you know that the seagulls are very important and they do a lot. But it was really stressful. Our assistant director passed me and I said, look, there's a couple seagulls over there and they're like, they're eating a carcass, you know, look, check it out. And he goes, don't even talk to me about seagulls. I know they're your fault. and I think everybody kind of had that attitude. Something else that was funny was actually this speaks to the writing process. You know, we're very specific about it all and we want to get it right. And there was a section that's early on in the film that is the first real scene of dialogue between the two of them. And we just, there was a piece of text that wasn't right. And it was in, it had all this, like, these sailors' lingo was about the dog watch. Something wasn't right. And I had to go back through rehearsal as we were doing with Willem Dafoe and then into, like, up until the first shooting day. Or actually, I should say, I think that was, like, the second or something. But basically, on the day, I was still working it. And finally, we got it. We got it right. It was factually correct. Willem at the time was like, look, don't worry. No one's going to know what I'm saying. And I was like, but we will, you know? So I give him the new sides and, you know, he learns them, thankfully. And then, like, when he's about to do the shoot, when he's about to do the take, I'm like, Willem, thank you so much. Thank you for taking our notes. And he goes, he looks at me and he goes, you guys are crazy. But we hadn't buried him alive yet, so he didn't actually know how crazy we were. So,
yeah. That's great. Anyway. So, a lot of my listeners are, you know, up-and-coming, mm-hmm. emerging screenwriters, mm-hmm. and they would love to, you know, see their movie up on screen.
Yeah.
What advice do you have?
Oh, man. I mean, I think you have to work your butt off. I mean, I know that's an old adage that is, you know, people do. People work really, really hard on their scripts. But I think, here's what I would say. I think be willing to collaborate. And I think be willing to face the fact that, you know, what you are, what you love and are precious about needs exposure. You need as many voices in this process as possible. Because as much as you think you love your story, I think collaboration is the name of the game. Even if you're not involved in the production level, I think give your script, even if you're afraid, to somebody and let them talk to you about it. Like, make sure that they know, make sure that it's something that can be as good as it can be. I cannot tell you from the theater, coming from that background, collaboration, even on something that is very personal, like screenwriting, is the name of the game. Because if you can't do that professionally, I think in this world, be willing to have a question asked of you and think about it, even if you don't know, it's impossible, you know? It's collaborating. I think that may be my biggest advice.
Sure. That's great.
Okay.
what's next for you?
Oh my God. Well, I mean, I right now working with Baba Kanvari and his producers on a project, but right now I can't say precisely what it is or anything like that. But you know, I'm talking to lots of different companies and producers and seeing where this takes me. You know, writing, of course, all the time. But yeah.
Well, I wish you nothing but the best of luck.
Thank you.
With this movie and your future career.
Thank you.
And I really hope everybody goes to see The Lighthouse because it's that good. It's so good. It's one of the best movies of the year for
sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Max.
Yeah, thank you.